recording. All right, there we are. Tuesday night's Bible study, our second class, The Art of Dying, and we're going to go through the middle part of this booklet called Final Victory. So I'm going to talk about the actual funeral service itself, and I'm going to zip through it fairly quickly. You've all been to plenty of funerals at our church, and I'm sure other churches as well, but just to kind of give you a little bit of good information and answer a few questions along the way. So if you go to page 20 in your booklet, if you guys want to look through one, you know, feel free. You can at least follow along if you like and just glance at it. That's not a problem. All right. So there's some information. I'm not going to read through everything. I'm going to kind of skim through some stuff, but if you guys have a chance to read it, or maybe you already have, that's fine. Let me know if you have questions. All right, if you turn the page, page 22, the order of service. So oftentimes we start out with a hymn. However, you guys remember Pastor Kordokas pretty much always start out by reading the sentences. Those are selected verses from the Psalms that talk about death and dying. It's a very somber way to start a funeral, and I've done that too when people have requested it. So that would be before the start of the service. More often we start with an opening hymn. Okay, and that's when we're processing in, pastor, pallbearers, the funeral directors are usually bringing in the casket, and the family is right behind that, and then you go in and sit down in the front pews. Then we start with the invocation, invoking God's name, you know all about that, and then remembrance of baptism. Bottom corner of page 23, I'm just going to read that little bit. In our baptism, our sins are forgiven and our death is overcome. The promises that the Lord gave us in our baptism are what give us great comfort and peace in the face of death. From beginning to end, the funeral liturgy is full of baptismal images, language, and scripture texts. Why such an emphasis on baptism? It is in this sacrament that the Lord forgives our sin, covers our shame, takes away the sting of death, and dispels the darkness of the grave. Yeah, there is a lot of talk about baptism and baptismal images in the funeral service. You'll notice that. So you see on the left-hand side, we include that, except in our case, I just read it. The pastor reads the whole thing instead of doing it responsibly like that. Okay, turn the page. Then, as is the next thing in our typical service, we have an introit, which is an entrance hymn or a psalm. We always use Psalm 23. It's the most comforting psalm. It's the most well-known psalm. I usually do ask the family when I'm talking to them about the service if they'd rather have the old King James, these and thou, and yea, though we walk through, you know, all that, or the more modern version, ESV, which we also use, so either way is fine. But it's a great psalm of comfort, and I think it gives comfort to all of us, Psalm 23. And then there's the Kyrie, bottom of page 25. Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy, Lord have mercy. Again, that it's similar to what we do in our regular church service. So funeral service is a regular church service. It's not, you know, something different or unusual. Okay, and then turn the page, 26. Salutation and collect of the day. So there is a prayer, and if you pay attention to that prayer, you've all heard it before. I use the same one for every funeral service of that prayer. We're giving thanks for all those servants who, having finished their course in faith, now rest from their labors. What a great thought. We go through this earthly life doing all the work that God puts before us, taking care of our families, ourselves, you know, spreading the gospel, volunteering at church, you know, going through all the work we do. Now we have rest from our labors. And that's language right from the Bible. So that's a comforting language there. Then we have the readings. And so next week I'll talk a little bit about some of the options, and so if you want to fill out a page for your church file on what your favorite scripture passages and hymns are, I'll talk about that next week. We'll have a little more time next week. But this is where then we have the Old Testament epistle and a gospel reading. And then we recite the baptismal creed, the Apostles' Creed. So on page 27 you see it there. It's the creed that we use when somebody's baptized. So it is nicknamed, Martin Luther nicknamed it, the baptismal creed. And so again, that connects us with our baptism. Why so much about baptism in the funeral service? Well, because when we're connected to Jesus in his baptism, as Paul says in Romans chapter 6, when we're connected to Jesus' death because of our baptism, we're connected to his death. We're also connected to his resurrection. So it gives us that hope of eternal life. And by the way, I'll insert right here just as a quick side note as well. That's why we often use the funeral pall. So what's traditional for when a baby or an adult is baptized, but most often a baby, adults oftentimes not, they would wear white, right? A white baptismal gown for a baby. Well, that's to represent or show or illustrate the robe of Christ's righteousness that covers you when you're baptized. It covers your sin. And then notice what we wear when you're confirmed. What do you wear then? A white robe. Because you've now been confirmed in the knowledge that you've been taught, what you've been taught about God, about Jesus, about the Bible. And then when you die in your funeral, we often use, many churches do, the funeral pall, which is reminiscent of you being covered by your baptismal grace. So that's included there. I know Diana's usually very heavily involved in that as one of our altar guild ladies, putting the pall on and taking it off. Notice the last two lines of the Apostles' Creed, which I think are particularly poignant and meaningful in a funeral. The resurrection of the body and the life everlasting. Yes, because of Jesus, we know we'll be resurrected from the dead and we will have life eternally. How wonderful. That's a great comfort there. All right, turn the page. Page 28. Then we have a hymn of the day and the sermon. And now, as many of you know, in our church, many other churches too, but not all, the sermon is not a eulogy. It's not an option for people to stand up and give their testimony or to recount fond memories of the person who passed away. That's not the point. We do that at the luncheon, if you want. But rather the sermon, and you've heard me do sermons, Pastor Q has much the same approach. I ask for some fond memories of the person who's passed away from the family, and I open the sermon with a few pleasant memories of what the person liked, hobbies, something significant in their life. But then at some point, I transition into talking about their faith. Faith in Jesus, the faith that you have in Jesus, because that's what saves you, and that's also what gives your loved ones comfort. To know because you have faith in Jesus, you're connected to him, you're connected to him through faith, you're connected to him through your baptism, therefore, you're in heaven. So even in the midst of sadness, that gives us comfort. So that's the primary focus of the sermon, is the faith of the person who God has called home. Okay? You guys recognize that. You've heard that in plenty of sermons that I've preached, and Pastor Q, and other Lutheran pastors as well. All right. Turn the page. Then we have the prayers of the church. You know, there's a whole bunch of them that we list in petition form. And each one with, Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayer. And then we close with the Lord's Prayer. Now, in our church, I usually skip the Nunc Dimittis, just because Pastor Q, that's how he did it. I don't know if it was before him. If somebody wanted us to read the Nunc Dimittis in your funeral service, then next week when I have the sheets for you, you can put it in there. Pastor, I would like you to do the Nunc Dimittis in my funeral. You can give me a note, I would do that. But we generally don't do that in our, just really it's more an issue of time. But it is good. Nunc Dimittis, now let your servant go in peace. Your word has been fulfilled. So you recognize that. All right, then you turn the page. Concluding collect, Benedicamus and the benediction, and then a closing hymn. And when a person has pre-selected their hymns, or if the family is picking hymns, whatever the most joyous Easter resurrection-focused hymn is among those selected, that's the one we end on. Okay? So we may talk about death at the beginning. It may start out somber if we're reading the sentences or not. But then the funeral builds, and we have hope and we have comfort as we hear about the faith of the person who has passed away. And then we end with a rousing Easter hymn or some other joyous hymn. So I usually put the hymns in an order so that it ends with, you know, the most joyful hymn that of those that are picked by the family or by the person who's passed away. Okay? Any questions about all that? I went through that pretty quick. But you got it all here. You can read it all more in depth if you want. A quick word about the committal. And see, I'm going to be done in way less than a half an hour, so you guys have bonus time if you want. All right, committal. You don't have to have a committal. You know, so I've done plenty of services with a committal and without. A lot of times, if a funeral is done somewhere else, and then the body or the remains are transported here, Starks takes care of that type of stuff, then we can do a committal here, just as if that's where the internment is or the burial is. So a committal is kind of, you know, it's a good thing, but it doesn't have to happen. All right, so turn the page 30. Yeah, go ahead.
Practice of scattering the ashes to the deceased, to the elements, is discouraged?
Yeah, we generally discourage that. If somebody's going to be cremated, then we would say, you know, it's in an urn, then you can inter that in a mausoleum or in the ground in a burial plot across the street. Right over there, they have little burial plots that instead of the length of a casket, they're like 3 feet square. And it's got a tiny little vault in there, and you put the ashes right in there.
But why would it be discouraged?
Well, because it's kind of like, you know, I think the reason is because it has pagan sources. That back, you know, 500 years ago, people who were atheists said, oh, you Christians, you claim your God is going to resurrect your body. Well, I'm going to prove to you that your God can't do that. When I die, I'm going to have my body burned and the ashes scattered in the ocean. Or whatever. And therefore, your God won't be able to resurrect my body. Well, of course, that's not true. Our God is God. And even if somebody's ashes are scattered in the ocean or in the wind or whatever, God can still reassemble those ashes and reconstitute a body on Judgment Day and raise you from the dead. He can still do that. But because of those pagan origins, we generally discourage it. Although I have had a few here in our church that have said, you know, for the funeral, they didn't have a casket with a body. They had an urn with ashes because the person was cremated. And then they told me afterwards, no, no committal. We're going to go scatter the ashes in Lake Michigan. I'm like, well, okay, you know. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but it is kind of discouraged. Sure. That's a good eye there. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Turn the page real quick. Committal.
Harry.
Oh yeah, Harry.
What about military rights?
Military rights, yes, at the cemetery.
Yes.
I've done it both ways, where they go first or I go first. I usually whisper to the funeral director and say, are they expecting to go first or second? I think it's fine either way. I've done it with the military rights from both the Legion here in Stevensville and the Legion in St. Joe. And they each do it a little bit differently. They'll play taps, they'll have a 21 gun salute, or maybe it's 7 guns with 3 shots each, or sometimes that's not included, but sometimes it is. And they have the flag on the casket, so nothing wrong with military rights. I respect that highly. That's the military honoring, you know, a fallen veteran. So, I generally, if I were given the option, which sometimes I am, where the Legion will say, oh, we don't care. We'll go first or second. I say, well, then I'll go first, because it's the religious part. You know, we're talking about God. And then they can do the military honors at the end. So, but it doesn't matter. Good question. Okay, page 34. I read a collect there where we're blessing the grave, where the remains of this person will be sleeping until Judgment Day. And then we have some, there's a few Bible verses I usually read. I have some typical ones that I read. Psalm 118, Job 19, John 11, and 1 Corinthians 15 are typical ones. That doesn't really matter to you. Although 1 Corinthians 15 is very interesting. That's where St. Paul says, death, where is your victory? Oh, death, where is your sting? Does that ring a bell? It's St. Paul is mocking death. Here we are standing at the grave, and I'm reading about St. Paul mocking death, because we know death has been conquered by Jesus when he rose from the dead, died on the cross, rose from the dead. Death has been defeated by Jesus, so we're mocking death at that point. It's kind of interesting. Then usually we skip the Apostles' Creed on page 35 if the committal is right after the service. Then there's the committal, starting on the bottom of page 35. We now commit the body of our dear brother or sister to its resting place, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life through our Lord Jesus Christ, who will change our lowly bodies so that they will be like his glorious body by the power that enables him to subdue all things to himself. Next page. May God the Father who created this body, may God the Son who by his blood redeemed this body, may God the Holy Spirit who by holy baptism sanctified this body to be his temple, keep these remains to the day of the resurrection of all flesh. And then we have the Lord's Prayer and then a closing prayer there. And then you see on page 37, I have never done Abide With Me. Oftentimes, that's a common hymn that people in our congregation pick as part of their funeral service. That's a very popular one. A lot of people pick Abide With Me. Even if you don't, I generally don't sing it there. I don't have any music, and you know, my voice is mediocre anyway. But again, if somebody put down notes in your funeral, you know, service directions to your family and to me or as your pastor or whatever, if you say, yes, I would like you to sing Abide With Me at the committal, well, then I would do it. Okay?
Would you do it by yourself or would you do it?
Well, I would start with the hopes that everyone else would join in. That would be my hope.
Yeah, because
yes.
One everyone knows.
Right. And look at that last verse of Abide With Me. Standing there at somebody's graveside, hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes, shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. In life and death, O Lord, abide with me. What poignant words. It really is a good opportunity for that. However, I'm going to say 2/3 of our funerals, we have Abide With Me somewhere in the funeral service, so then I don't do it here anyway. And then, yes, alleluia, Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, and then there's the benediction. And then usually at that point I look at the funeral director, and if there's military rites, then he'll give a nod to the captain of the military rites, or if there's not, he'll usually say something like, thank you for coming out and joining us and the family tonight. You know, you're welcome to join at the church for a luncheon. You know, usually he'll say something like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's real brief. Boy, that was 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I zoomed through that. Any more questions?
Pastor, I just have a comment for the gentleman. When it comes to military services, typically Vanessa and I would take care of a lot of those needs or any of our funeral directors at the funeral home. For our attendees, we'd be happy to help create that procession as well. So that's something that we typically do.
Oh, would you need their picture?
We would need a copy of your DD-214 in order to, your honorable discharge form, in order to basically just abide by those parameters with that. But that's really all we would need. And we could always talk even further about other veteran services if necessary.
Thank you.
Any other questions from you folks? All right. Let me introduce these three people from Starks. As you guys know, Starks and Mensinger does most of our funerals, although I maybe should mention your competitor, a few people. Pike Funeral Home in Bridgman, they do maybe a quarter to a third of our funerals, but Starks does most of our funerals. So I know all the funeral directors pretty well. So this is Skyler.
Yeah.
And Vanessa and Mark.
Hello.
All three from Stark. So Skyler's going to start out with a little presentation, and everybody got a folder, and then there'll be time for questions and answers after that. And I will let you guys know, I think Harry and Pat might sneak out because they said they already pre-planned their funeral with Starks, in fact.
That's lovely.
So they probably already heard your presentation at some point. So
yeah.
Don't be upset about that. But I'm going to leave the recording running. And then, I guess, go ahead, Skyler. Floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, again, just thank you, Pastor, for that introduction. Just to give a brief background, I just want to explain what this program is all about. So we call it the Peace of Mind Seminar because as many families as we've met with to kind of help take these things care of in advance, that's probably the most common response that we hear from families is, Skyler, Mark, Vanessa, you've given me and my family just so much peace of mind knowing this is already done and taken care of. And I just think what better setting, because you guys are actually kind of studying this together as a group and going through this. But we do these at churches. We'll hold them sometimes at our funeral home. We'll do them at restaurants because, honestly, this is information that we want to learn more about. But the subject matter being what it is, it's kind of hard to kind of take those initiatory steps to kind of get that initial information. So doing that at church just kind of makes it a little bit more of a laid-back feel, and you're with your friends and your peers, and we can just kind of walk you through this information. But like he said, just for sake of time, I'm probably going to go a little bit quicker than normal here. But I have a quick 2-minute video that I just want to share and then highlight a couple of points that the video makes.
You have like 40 minutes, so you don't have to squish it if you want.
Think about everything you plan for. Dinners, dates, vacations, college, careers, weddings, children, retirement. You make plans to organize your life, to prepare as best you can, to make the most of these moments so that they can be truly meaningful. Experience teaches you that taking care of as many details as you can today will help ensure that you appreciate these moments when they finally arrive. With proper planning, even seemingly ordinary occasions have the power to become profound. Yet there's one thing most of us forget. Of all of these life's most meaningful moments, the one that rarely gets checked off the list, the one that most people neglect or deliberately choose to ignore, is the one that is perhaps the most significant, your funeral. We put it off, it's taboo, so we're left unprepared. Except so are our loved ones. At a time when healing and meaningful connection are needed most, family members and loved ones are left to pick up the pieces. They worry about what you wanted and become confused about how you wished to be remembered. Suddenly, choices come flying at them all at once, and they're forced to make hundreds of decisions, not least of which is how they'll pay for it. Surprisingly, a will covers none of this. It lays out a plan for your belongings, not for you and your loved ones, nor for how they'll begin to heal after you're gone. Which is exactly why pre-planning a funeral can help. Your loved ones will remember you forever. They will remember the countless moments from throughout your life, the joy, the challenges, the triumphs. They'll remember the sound of your laugh and the gleam of your smile. And they will want a chance to connect and to share these many memories together. Pre-planning a funeral will give you peace of mind. It is a smart investment economically and a wise choice for the well-being of your family. When you make an intentional plan for your loved ones to gather and begin to heal, it is more than just the details. It is a responsible and considerate gift that will continue to live on in their memories.
I'm going to stay where you stood. I'm going to have a better spot.
Sure, sure. I'll have to turn around then so I can see you.
Alrighty. So again, like you said, my name is Skyler. And I like to highlight a few points that that video makes, because I used to just kind of ask families, after we watched the video, I'd say, what do you guys think? And they would say, that bumblebee was so cute. I'm like,
so, and the flowers.
And the flowers. So a couple of things that it highlights is that, first and foremost, as people, we are just planners by nature. So whether it's birthday parties, anniversaries, weddings, we plan those events well in advance to make the day of the event go by a lot smoother. And again, there's no difference with our funeral, but as I alluded to earlier, the subject matter being what it is, we talked about it being taboo. We don't like to talk about it, even with our close family. And so doing the opportunity like this to do this Peace of Mind seminar will just kind of help us get that information, education, into the benefits of pre-planning. And then secondly, it talked about a living will. And I just want to stress, don't hear me wrong, having a living will in place is a good thing. But on occasion, I met with a family who says, Skyler, I think I have a lot of my pre-planning already done. And I'll say, well, what do you mean by that? They say, well, I have my living will in place. Now, did anybody pay attention to when they said when the will is actually read? It's after what? After the funeral. So a will, its main intention is to lay out a plan for your belongings after you pass away. And it might detail whether you want to be buried or cremated. But again, don't forget, pre-planning your funeral is specifically going to accomplish that purpose. And it's going to address your wishes ahead of time or before the funeral there, of course. So again, we have a little bit of a game to play. It's called Funeral Home Trivia. You guys have probably played it before, right? But just to kind of, again, for sake of time, I know we have a little bit extra time there, but I'll kind of go through this a little quick. But the first question, it says, who holds the record for the world's most expensive funeral? Mm-hmm. All right. Answer is... Princess Diana.
That's who I was going to guess.
I actually had to double check that because Queen Elizabeth just passed away. Not too long ago. She still holds the most expensive funeral. Is there anybody here trying to beat that? Everyone laughs. I don't get it. Second question here says, which celebrity saw their funeral ticket scalped for more than $10,000? Michael Jackson, Elvis, Prince, or John Lennon?
Elvis.
Elvis.
John Lennon.
John Lennon.
Michael Jackson. So they had tickets for the funeral.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody trying to do that? So he passed away. I was a junior going into my senior year of high school, and of course, just the celebrity status that he kind of is, him passing away was pretty shocking. And he had his funeral held at the Staples Center, which is where the Los Angeles Lakers played. And like he was just saying, if you wanted to attend the funeral, you had to pay $10,000 a ticket.
So, wow.
All right. Next question here. It says, who owns the plot next to Marilyn Monroe? Joe DiMaggio, Madonna, Hugh Hefner, or John F. Kennedy?
Joe DiMaggio.
Madonna, probably.
Hugh Hefner.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, a lot of people think it was Joe because they were together and they dated, but he was the one that actually owned the plot next to her there. All right, last question here. Just to see a show of hands, how many veterans do we have here with us? Just the one? Well, thank you for your service, sir. You might have a little bit of an advantage on this one. But it says, for a veteran service, how many stars should be visible on a properly folded flag? And it's kind of open-ended. It's not a multiple choice, but I'm feeling gracious tonight, so I'll give you a couple options. You have 4, 8, 12, or 13 stars should be shown on a properly folded flag.
I'd guess 13.
Yeah, I would guess 13, too.
4.
Four.
And it's to represent each individual major branch of service. So the Coast Guard and the Space Force are not included, but the four major branches there. So next time you guys play funeral trivia, you guys will be great.
Yeah.
We'll be ready.
Well, again, just to kind of give us a brief introduction, this is our agenda for tonight. So we started with that trivia. I'm going to segue into giving a brief introduction of myself and how I got involved into this industry, but then also I'm going to have Mark kind of come up and just explain Stark's funeral home industry, background history there as well. I'm going to walk us through what the final wishes organizer is. We'll talk about common reasons why people do decide to pre-plan their funerals. The acute loss period. Towards the end, we'll summarize what the 5 key points to a funeral policy are. And then we'll have a little bit of time to talk about customizing your own personal plan and then open it up to a little bit of Q&A there as well. So, let's see if it goes here. My story. Got a little bit of a glare on the screen. So that's me and my wife, Shelby. We just had our first December 10th, so she just turned 3 months old.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, awesome.
And she was so close to Christmas, and Christmas is my favorite time of the year, so her middle name is Noelle.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just her already assuming the throne. And then that's me and my church softball team. I usually play over every summer there in Kalamazoo. But I will say, I've been doing this now for 10 years, and I'm 32, so I started right out of college. And I will say, of course, I have a baby face, so when I first started, you can imagine 10 years ago how much younger I looked. And I would meet with families, and they would say, Skylar, aren't you late for class or something? Kind of a thing. And I had to always kind of explain how I got involved in this industry. So I'm just kind of following in my dad's footsteps, so to speak. So he actually is still working, and he also works with Starks, but he's in his 41st year of being in this industry. And so I went to school at the University of Indianapolis because I'm originally from Elkhart, Indiana. And the summer between my junior and senior year of college, I had to work an internship. Now, I knew what my dad did, but I never fully understood it, and it always kind of piqued my curiosity. And so having worked an internship, I called him and say, Dad, I know what you do, but I don't feel fully know what you do. And I've always just been a little curious. Is there some way you can kind of help me get connected to work an internship at a funeral home so I can have a better picture or understanding of what it is that you do every day? And so that's exactly what happened. I worked for a funeral home in Indianapolis called Flannery Buchanan, and I just sat in with funeral directors, and I honestly saw the difference between families coming in that were kind of starting from scratch versus those families who already had everything laid out and detailed. And again, don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying it was a nightmare every time or nothing like that. But again, it was immensely different between those families that were coming in, of course, who just lost a loved one, and having to figure everything out versus those who already had everything taken care of, and they were just confirming, for example, mom or dad's arrangements. And so after I finished up that internship, I said, Dad, now I truly know why you do what you do, and I've always liked helping people too, and I think I want to kind of follow your footsteps. And then so ever since I graduated college, again, I've been in this industry, so I've been here now for 10 years. So, Mark, I'm going to go ahead and have you come up and just briefly explain the Starks family history.
Well, I used to ask Skylar if he was late for class. I actually used to be Skylar's high school baseball coach at Concord High School in Elkhart. Many, many years ago, I was a teacher and a coach. but I get along better with 67-year-olds rather than 17-year-olds, and that's just how that goes. But with the Starks team, you might recognize Bob and Carol Starks. Bob came here in 1961 from the other side of the state and connected with Louis Curlikowski. You probably recall that name, Curly and Starks, or Curlikowski and Starks. And Bob, while is still ever present, usually at the Senior Center or at our facility, him and Carol are still doing well and thriving. Their son, Tom, is our main umbrella holder, Tom Starks. You may have come across Tom at some point in your day-to-day in the community. Very philanthropic, but very involved, a man that wears many hats and certainly a guiding light for all of us at Starks, which is lovely. His two daughters, Olivia and Laura, respectively, are thriving with us. They are, really helping us take pre-need component into the next level. And so we've been very blessed to have a family-owned and operated facility that is important. I know Skyler will touch on that, but family-owned and operated. So we live here in the community, and we get to see you whether we're here to service or getting chicken at Martin's, whatever it would be. Vanessa Lenz here is right here. Vanessa and I work together hand in hand with many, many families at all seven of our facilities. So while we will see you in the community, we are always dispersed around, and so we try to help as many families and serve as many as we possibly can. And then myself, which I recently, at a whim of my wife, I put some beard dye in my facial hair, and I did like the show Miami Vice. I didn't know I'd be living it, but I decided that was a good idea for me. Anyway, back to you, Skyler.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So going back to when I was kind of explaining my internship with that funeral home, of course, being in college, all my peers would be like, what are you doing working at a funeral home? What was that like? And if I had to summarize it into one phrase, when I first saw this slide, that was the best way I could articulate it. In other words, there's just a lot of decisions that have to be made for a family in a very short window of time. So right there it says 75 plus things in 36 hours. And I will say everything post-COVID, just because we had to get flexible, we could live stream services and different things like that, there's maybe close to 100 to 125 decisions that can be made all at the same time. So something that we offer families in advance to capture a lot of that information and make it easier ahead of time is what we call the Final Wishes Organizer. And I will truly tell families, if that is filled out properly, that would help eliminate about 95% of the items and decisions, again, ahead of time. So first and foremost, it captures all of the vital statistical information. So I will tell you, information that's easy for us to share right now, when someone's lost somebody, it can be difficult to recall phone numbers, social security, birthplace, different things like that. But if we already have all that information in advance, it's going to lift up a lot of that emotional burden for the kids or for the family at that time. But I let families know that really accomplishes two things. It helps start a file for you at the funeral home, but more importantly, all that vital statistical information would also help complete a death certificate at the time there as well. Again, I know we had a veteran here, so we have the military record, and Mark was alluding to that earlier. The only thing that we would really need in advance is a copy of your DD-214, or your honorable discharge form, and that makes you eligible for some different veterans benefits. And since you're here, I just want to briefly walk you through those. But in Michigan, we are blessed to have two national cemeteries. One is in Augusta, or Battle Creek, called Fort Custer National Cemetery. The other one is in Holly, Michigan, close to Flint area, called Great Lakes National Cemetery. And whether your preference is to be buried or cremated, I kind of phrase it this way, but once you enter the gates of a national cemetery, there are no costs. So the funeral and or cremation service and the casket or urn is always still going to be the family's responsibility or obligation, but the VA will pay for all of the cemetery costs for the veteran and his or her spouse at a national cemetery. So that's referring to the burial plot, the opening and closing, the vault, and the headstone are all covered for the veteran and his or her spouse, again, incumbent upon having that DD-214 there. Also, again, for veterans, I think you mentioned this too, sir, you can have a military honor service if you would like to. That's the TAPS, the American flag presented to your family there as well. The special instructions, that helps capture a lot of the special details that makes you unique. So just to kind of share a personal story, I lost my grandpa 3 years ago, so it was 2021. And obviously, it being the year after COVID, you know, you've probably heard a phrase before, we don't have family reunions as much as we used to. It's usually at weddings and funerals, and that's kind of the case for my family too. And so I hadn't seen a lot of my family, but that gave us an opportunity to kind of get back together when he had passed away. But my grandpa had muscular dystrophy, and my grandma was his primary caretaker, and I want to say his death was expected, but it still, you know, surprised us. It came a little bit quicker than we were anticipating. But before he had passed, he had asked me, because I play guitar and my wife sings, and we were at their house. And he goes, Skyler, he goes, I got a request for you. I said, yeah, what's that? He goes, at my funeral, he goes, I want you to play the song Go Rest High on That Mountain by Vince Gill. And I actually had my guitar with me. I was like, done, no problem. He goes, better yet, I want to make sure it sounds good. Why don't you go ahead and play it for me right now? I'm like, oh. All right, so I kind of regret it now, but in that moment I couldn't do it because I just got too emotional. And so I went downstairs, I'm just contemplating it and everything, and then sure enough, my wife stayed up there, and she's singing it to him a cappella. And so I'm bawling down, wow, like a baby, I'm crying. And then she comes down, and I said, what did he think? She goes, he loved it and stuff. But that was his special request to us, and we felt good, of course, honoring that wish. And so when we went to the funeral, a lot of family didn't know we were doing that. So I walk into the funeral home, I have my guitar in my back, and my grandma walks up to me. She goes, Skyler, what are you doing with that guitar? I said, you'll see. And of course, don't hear me wrong, I'm not trying to take anything away from my grandpa's service, but I had so many family members and friends come up to us and say that was one of the most memorable parts of grandpa's service, was honoring and doing that song for him there. But again, each of us have an individual idea or unique thought, something that's important to us, and that's what we can kind of make it and capture that to make it memorable for your family. Emergency contacts, we always keep a record of course, a spouse, followed by the kids, but we can keep as much information on hand as you need. So if you want to share, of course, the pastor's information, just kind of having that handy, a neighbor, a friend, just having all of that ahead of time, too, makes it a lot easier. And then lastly, it says funeral home service request. That's really whether you want to have your funeral service at the funeral home or the church, because we get asked that a lot, and it makes no difference. But again, having that record in advance just eliminates any doubt in terms of where you wanted it, location-wise there, too. So again, that's that final wishes organizer. Common reasons why people want to pre-plan their funerals, right there in the middle, it says decisions that would burden family members later are all handled now. It eliminates no doubt in terms of what the funeral or disposition should include. So when I use that word disposition, again, what that's referring to is whether we want to be buried or cremated. And it's 50-50, right? But I can honestly tell you, if nothing's captured in advance, you're leaving someone else in charge to kind of figure that out. And that's what, again, going back to my internship, that's what I saw. Kids are uncertain in terms of what they're, if they're honoring mom and dad's wishes. So even though it's 50-50, just laying that out in advance too, everyone emotionally feels good, which leads us to the point over here. It says the peace of mind that it gives to you and your family. It allows your loved ones to have a positive grieving experience. And so I always tell families, if you have all this captured in advance, don't hear me wrong, our funeral directors and staff would love to help assist your family at that time, and they will. But if you already have all this eliminated, it's less time your family has to spend at the funeral home and more time they get to spend at home with their family and begin healing. Because I would say, on average, if someone's kind of starting from scratch, it can take 2 to 3 hours to kind of make all these arrangements. Versus someone who has it already all done, it might take 20 to 30 minutes just to confirm the day and time and where they want to eat. So the last point there on the left, it says, it ensures that all the funeral costs have been addressed. So again, anytime I'm meeting with the family, that's usually a good question that comes up. How much is it going to cost? And as we kind of narrow down what your specific wishes are, we can provide you with a specific cost estimate to that as well.
A real quick comment just to reinforce what you said about the timing. Yeah. A lot of times if somebody's passed away and I get a call from one of the funeral directors at Starks, and they'll say, we're just calling to check on a date and a time, see if you're available, Pastor, if the church is available. Yep, I'm fine. And then I'll usually say, can you send them over to me when you're done so that we can talk about the funeral service? Mm-hmm. Just, you know, scripture lessons, hymns, a bulletin cover, that kind of thing.
Right.
I only need about 20 minutes to do that. And usually one of your funeral directors will say, yeah, it'll be about 2 hours. And I say, I'll be here.
Right.
I'll wait for them.
Right, right.
I got other work to do, but, you know, but yes, I know that if somebody's, it takes hours or more to make all those decisions. So yeah, it's good to have that stuff pre-done.
So going back to that slide that kind of shared the itinerary, I talked about us going to be discussing something called the acute loss period. We call it ALP for short. So I'm going to tie in again my personal experience when I lost my grandpa, but it just kind of uses 9/11 as an example to kind of walk us through what that acute loss period is. So for example, when you guys see this picture, you've heard it said a picture is worth a thousand words. But when we think of 9/11, you guys probably know exactly where you were at and what you were doing when you first heard the news that a plane had just crashed into the World Trade Center. And so the acute loss period is essentially seven different phases or steps that we go through as people when we lose a loved one. And so that's the very first step, is when did you hear the news? So this is a picture of George Bush being informed that that first plane had just crashed into the World Trade Center. And I was only, I think, 9 years old when this had happened, so I was in second grade, so the detail's a little foggy, but sometimes my dad will give this presentation too, so I kind of borrow from him. But I was in second grade, my sister was in fifth grade, and my brother was in first grade, and my mom also worked at the elementary school, so of course he heard the news. The first person he called was my mom. He started to share that news. He just wanted to make sure that she was okay, and all of us, our kids were okay, and did you just see what had happened? Which leads us to the next phase there. You hear it, you share it, and then it says, when did you see? And even though I was only 9 years old, this is still a pretty memorable event. And I remember getting back home from school, all of our family was just kind of glued to the TV and just trying to figure out what is going on. Two planes now had crashed, and one had crashed into the Pentagon. But this is actually a little screenshot of people on the street of New York City right after that first plane had crashed. But you can just kind of tell everyone has that same look of shock and awe, that same expression on their face. And sometimes for us as people, seeing is believing. And after we see it, it says we gather nationally. Now, I don't know the specific statistics, but I know both nationally and locally, church attendance was back up. We were very patriotic. We united together as a nation. And as I alluded to earlier, a lot of people tell me, well, Skyler, we don't do family reunions anymore. The only time we get together now again is at funerals and weddings. And again, that's kind of the case for my family. But when we gather together, we're able to make connections. And so, like I said, tying in my grandpa when he passed away, he technically was my step-grandpa because my biological grandfather passed away before I was born, and my grandma remarried, so I only knew him as grandpa. But he had family back in Illinois from where he grew up and stuff like that. So he had grandkids on that side that I actually never met growing up my whole life face-to-face. But we were in similar life stages with his grandkids. So he would always show me pictures and kind of give me updates on what they're up to and what they're doing. And even though I never met them physically face to face, when I saw them at the funeral, I felt like I had known them my whole life. And I was able to make that connection with them at my grandma, my grandpa's funeral there as well. But after we connect, we reflect on what was lost. And again, this speaks a lot to me too, because I think that was the very first question I had asked when I got to the funeral. Like I said, my grandpa had muscular dystrophy, and he had it for as long as I can remember. So my grandma, again, was his primary caretaker, and now she just lost her best friend, and she's been so accustomed to doing that, now she's by herself. How is she going to acclimate and adjust to life moving forward? And so when I got to the funeral, I asked my dad, how's grandma doing? She's doing all right. I said, are you just going to kind of keep an eye on her, or what's going on? Well, my dad's brother, so my uncle, who's from Bloomington, Indiana, took off 2 weeks of work just to live with my grandma, just to kind of help her settle and adjust that way. But again, when someone passes away, we take a personal reflection on, of course, who passed away, but how are the people who are left behind going to move on? And then lastly, it says we celebrated what mattered most. So I like this picture because this is almost like a pristine, perfect American flag that was found underneath the rubble of the Twin Towers that they kind of hosted up on that flagpole there. But of course, when I say celebrate, I'm not talking about fireworks or nothing like that. But again, going back to my grandpa's service, he was an Air Force veteran. So we had the taps, the gun salute, the American flag was handed and folded to my grandma. But after all the services had concluded, that's when we went back to the church. We had lunch. I was able to kind of loosen up the tie a little bit. But I can honestly tell you, my grandpa was probably the smartest person that I had ever known. And when I first moved to Michigan in 2016, I was living the bachelor life, and I am not the most handy person that there is. So if something malfunctioned with my car or something was broken down at the apartment, I could always give him a call, and he would always kind of walk me through and kind of help guide me through that. And so I was just sharing so many stories about my grandpa and how he helped me get out of some difficult situations there. But again, the whole point of this illustration is that it's saying one day your friends and family are going to have their own personal 9/11 experience when they lose you. And so even though I've been at the funeral home for 10 years, this was introduced to me maybe back in 2018, and when I saw that, it's hard to articulate to a family what they kind of go through, you know, at the funeral home, but I think this diagram kind of helps illustrate that. So as we just kind of walk through, we hear the news, we share it, and we see it, and that helps with our emotional needs. We gather together and we make connections, and that helps with our relational needs. And then we reflect and we celebrate, and that helps cope with our spiritual needs. And at the very center of that wheel, it says begin healing. So again, still to this day, when I'm catching up with some old friends or family and stuff like that, and say, Sky, what are you doing? I say, I'm working at a funeral home. Ooh, that's morbid. What are you doing there? You know, kind of thing. I say, well, actually what I do is I help families begin healing. That's my answer. And like I said, I've been doing this 10 years. I've never gotten tired of that because I know the benefit and the value that it adds on what's already a difficult day to the family that's left behind there. So everything we've talked up to this point so far has been in regards to the emotional benefits of pre-planning. And I always tell families there's two benefits to pre-planning. There's the emotional side, and there's the economic benefit as well. So this right here, it says the 5 key points to a funeral policy. And so the funeral policy is only something that you can get at a funeral home. So again, honestly, a lot of people don't know about it or never heard about it because it's unique to a funeral home. But I just want to walk you through and explain to you what it is, how does it work, and kind of go through that. So the first point there, it says it locks in the cost. Now, you guys might have already heard that before, but I will say that's the most fundamental benefit of pre-funding in advance. As if you meet with Vanessa or Mark, and as you kind of express or share with them how you want things to go, again, they will provide you that cost estimate, and if you're in a position to pay that, whatever that cost is today, it's locked in and guaranteed at today's rates. Point number two, it says the funds are protected by the insurance provider. And that's probably the most frequent question that I get asked. I say, Scott, not that it would happen, but let's say you have it all prearranged, let's say you have it all prepaid, what if something happened to your funeral home? You know, what would happen to our money? And so we actually never hold on to the money in advance, and that's the way that we want it, to protect your money and to keep it safe. So we use a third-party beneficiary, which is a life insurance company called National Guardian Life, or NGL, and they are just essentially the holders, overseers, and protectors of those monies. So when someone asks me that question, but what if something happens to your funeral home, I say, if something ever happens to us, number one, don't panic because we physically don't have the money. I say, number two, nothing's changed cost-wise, and nothing's changed how you wanted things done. The only thing that could ever potentially change is the provider of those funeral home services. Which brings me to point number three, it's transferable. So to answer that question still, I say if either A, something happened to your funeral home, or let's just say you decided to move or relocate, this funeral policy is 100% transferable. You can take it with you wherever you go in the country. So it's flexible that way. Point number four, it says manageable payments. So like I was saying, if we come up with a cost estimate, whatever that total comes out to be, if you're in a position to pay that in full, great, it's paid and it's done. But we understand that everyone's in that position, and so we have different payment plans that you can set it up on as well. Now, they're all monthly payment plans that are attached to a specific term, like a 3-year plan, a 5-year, but regardless of how you set it up initially, you are always in control of how you want to finish it. And so what I mean by that, if you just set it up on a 5-year plan, just set it up and start that way, but you want to pay it off next year, of course you can do that. There's no early payoff penalty, there's no early payoff fine. Just one more thing I want to share in regards to that. So I showed you a picture of me and my wife earlier, and we just had our baby. So she's now planning on being a stay-at-home mom, but she actually was a funeral director as well. And so I would tease families and say, you can imagine our dinner table conversations at night. But she would always tell me, she goes, Skylar, I get a little envious of you and what you're able to provide. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, when I meet with a family, again, they just lost a loved one, they're working out all these details, and then I got to turn everything around and say, how do you guys want to pay for that today? And she goes, I know the answer is only one option. They have to pay in full. There's no payment plan or nothing like that. But on my side of the equation, I can say, this is your cost. This is the funeral policy and how it works. And these are your payment options. Which option works out best for you? So it makes it a little bit easier on my side, providing that flexibility there. But then lastly, it says protection during the payment period. So since that insurance company is the holder of those funds, regardless of which payment plan that they choose, there are two health questions that we have to ask just to know how the protection is enabled. But if they set it up on a payment plan, I'll just use that 5-year for an example, if they're paying into that, and let's just say 2 years in, they passed away, the insurance is protecting the individual that in the event if they pass away before it's paid off, the insurance covers the balance. Mm-hmm. So there's protection built into it that will never leave any financial burden left behind for anyone to pick up or anything that way. One last thing. I know there's 5 key points, but technically there's a 6, but it's really important. A good question we'll get at the funeral home is, Skyler, what about if my mom or my dad, for example, went into a nursing home or did a Medicaid spend down? I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that before, but that is something that happens maybe once or twice a week in terms of getting the call at the funeral home, and it would generally be the kids calling on behalf of maybe your mom or dad because they're in a position where they have to go into a nursing home or assisted living, which is okay, but again, just speaking from my experience, right now they could be $9,000-$10,000 a month to be in a nursing home, and even if mom or dad has a nest egg, if they're writing out a check for $10,000, it can go by really quick. And so usually what the nursing home will ask the family is, does your mom or dad have their funerals already prearranged or prepaid? Well, no, why does that matter? Well, I understand they have some money to kind of work with right now. We understand it's not going to last forever. While they still have it, why don't you go ahead and use that and take care of their funeral arrangements? Because if they can no longer afford the care at the nursing home, they'll have to do what they call a Medicaid spend down. And they will have to spend down all of their accountable assets below $2,000 in the state of Michigan. And so we're just saying before we get to that point, while they still have some money, get this taken care of, because this is irrevocably assigned to the funeral home, so if they have to do that spend down, this does not count as an asset against them. Again, that's really, really important, because sometimes two people will ask about life insurance, and again, nothing's wrong with that, but life insurance is not irrevocable. It is revocable, and that's what this is specifically designed for. It makes your wishes known, it locks in and guarantees your cost, but is an irrevocable asset assigned to the funeral home and to be protected from Medicaid there as well. Almost done here. Last slide. It says out of area protection, and I love sharing about this too. Another good question I get all the time is, Skyler, okay, what if I have everything prearranged? Let's say I have it all prepaid, it's all done. Well, my spouse and I, we go to Florida, we visit our grandkids over here, we're going on vacation. Just what if we had it all done, but we passed away from home? What do we do? And that's what that plan is specifically designed for. So it's called out of area protection. And it comes from a company that we work with called MASA, right there, M-A-S-A. It's a one-time benefit. It's a one-time payment, lifetime benefit. And specifically, anytime you're 75 miles away from home or further, anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world, that plan pays for every expense to get you back home at no extra cost or expense to the family. It would cover the plane ticket, the embalming, the shipping container, everything to get you back home at no extra cost. Like I said, it's a lifetime membership. That's what's unique too. They'll issue you a wallet membership card, so you get 2 per individual. It will just look like a credit card, but it'll say MASA on it. It'll have your name and a toll-free number. So I tell people, keep one in your wallet. Mrs., keep her in the purse. And God forbid, if you passed away from home, you would just have to call that number on that card, and they'll pay the bill to get the person who had passed away back home. Worldwide coverage, and there's no age limits, health questions, or deductibles. So, again, that is the out-of-area protection plan.
That's on top of so that's an extra fee.
Yep, exactly. So, and to make it a little bit helpful, too, like when we kind of put that cost estimate together, you're right, even though it's a separate third-party cost from MASA, we'll tie it into the total so you still have that total figure there. But you're right, it is a separate cost there. Just as next steps, we need to get you your final wishes organizer. We can help complete the memorial guide for you. We will customize your plan, and we can cover your specific funding options. So I just want to say thank you again, Pastor, for giving us this opportunity, because in this setting, we can cover as much information as we can in a general sense. But I will tell you, too, we do our best work one-on-one because, again, each of us have an individual thought or idea in terms of how we want our service. And so Mark and Vanessa handed out those surveys to you. If you haven't already, just take a chance to kind of fill that out and everything, and then Mark and Vanessa will kind of be around. If you're interested in setting up a day and time to kind of meet with Mark or Vanessa, let them know, and they can do that. And I want to go ahead and open it up to a little bit of Q&A here, too. So Does anybody have any questions? Yes, sir.
Just to get an idea, because...
There's always one.
Yeah, I'm young enough that I haven't had to go through a funeral with an immediate family member. What's the range of costs? Like a low-cost funeral versus a more typical average versus maybe a higher-cost funeral, just so I have a number in my head. Because you're talking about funding options and payment plans.
Right.
Well, you know, it makes a difference if it's this much or that much, whether I would need a funding plan.
It all depends on what you want. So I'm going to give you the ballpark, but it's really hard just to kind of give you a straight answer.
I mean, I can throw numbers at you, but he could give you the ballpark.
All right.
So for example, if someone's looking at cremation, there's really three main options that you have. A direct cremation, which means there's no gathering, there's no service of any kind. You're just taking care of the cremation. That could be anywhere from 3 to 5, somewhere in that range. The next option with cremation is what they call a memorial cremation, or sometimes you've probably heard the phrase a celebration of life, where there's no physical body present, but the urn is there at the church or at the funeral home, and you still have a gathering and a service. That could be anywhere from 6 to 8, somewhere in that range. And the last option is what they call a traditional cremation. This is actually what my grandpa had when he had passed, I was alluding to. He had a traditional funeral. He was embalmed, was shown in a casket, everything in that traditional format, but then cremation took place after the service, and that could be anywhere from 8 to 10, somewhere in that range. And then if you're looking at a traditional funeral with casket, again, embalming, service, everything that way, it could be anywhere between 10 to 13, somewhere in that range too. Again, all depends on your preferences and selections and stuff like that. But
so like 3 to 13. 3,000 to 13,000.
Oh, 13,000 for the traditional burial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the complete range.
Yes, yeah, 3 to 13.
So on the cremation side, very bare minimum, 3,000-ish.
Yep.
All the way up to 13.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you.
What's the normal burial plot cost? Is a vault?
That's a good question, too. It depends on which cemetery you go to. Now, the vaults...
Across the street.
Across the street. If you're a Lincoln Township resident, you're probably looking at $600 to $700. If you're a non-Lincoln Township resident, Hickory Bluff, it could be closer to $850 to $900. If we're talking Riverview and you're a Lincoln Township resident, you're probably considering, dare I say, almost $15. But if you are a St. Joseph City resident, that could be even closer to $900. So they all fluctuate based on where you currently reside and which cemetery plot you are looking at. And to piggyback on that, if any of you are considering cremation, there is something that Pastor was talking about just a bit ago where we're above ground, almost in a mausoleum-esque type situation. They're called columbariums. They kind of look like post office boxes, but they give those that have apprehension about being underground an opportunity to be interred above ground. And Hickory Bluff does have them, and obviously we find Hickory Bluff a very beautiful cemetery just next door. So if there are individual questions, Vanessa and I would be more than happy to get information in your hands that we have regarding all of our cemeteries. That way you know everything up front prior to any type of surprising.
Well, regarding the cemetery plots, is that something that we should do through you guys, or if I wanted to pre-purchase the cemetery plot before getting into all the pre-planning, you would take care of pre-purchasing a cemetery plot, or we can go
to sell that to you. You would utilize the town clerk's office at each location.
Okay, so okay.
So either Stacy Porter or Abby over at the St.
Lincoln
office.
Okay.
And just to piggyback off that, so that's true, but you kind of mentioned the vault. I just want to get back to your original question. That is sometimes labeled as a cemetery expense, but the vault does come from us at the funeral home. So that's a guaranteed expense that can come from us. And then there's essentially, again, four different cemetery expenses that you have. So, yes, the plot would come from the cemetery. The marker, the headstone, would come from a monument company. And depending on which cemetery you're going to, sometimes they can refer one to you. Of course, we can give our suggestions there as well. But the last cemetery expense is the opening and closing, or sometimes it's called the interment fee. That is a cemetery expense, and again, I won't say all, but the vast majority of cemeteries, let's just say you're trying to take care of everything, they won't allow you to prepay the opening and closing directly with the cemetery just because they can't guarantee what the cost of labor is going to be at that time. So that's something we can kind of put in our estimate to offset it, you know, at the time there as well. But that's a good question. Yep. Did you have another question?
Pastor answered.
Oh. Okay. Well, good questions. Anything else? like I said, I don't think it could be better timing. Again, we're here, and of course, you guys are kind of going through this, and I hope you guys found this helpful, but I think we got...
Not a question so much as a comment. We have 7 children. It gives them peace of mind knowing that all of this is taken care of. Get 7 people together and try to make a decision. Just when my brother passed away earlier in the year, there were the 3 girls and the brother passed away. Just with 3 of us there, you know, it was difficult to make a decision. I can't imagine 7 together in a room trying to make a decision.
How do you guys order pizza in that house? But no, I'm so glad you said that, because...
But it is peace and comfort for them too. Not only for you knowing that everything's taken care of for each other, but that, you know, for our children too. It just makes it that much easier at a trying time for everybody.
Exactly. So just a couple of things. I'm glad you said that. I will tell you, going back to my internship, some of the most, again, I'm not saying everyone, but some of the most heated debates or arguments I've seen have been in that room at the funeral home, because, again, I'm not saying your family, of course, but families, again, have 3 kids, or there's maybe people that got remarried and have split family and different stuff, and people can just get really intense in that moment when they just lost a loved one there as well. But again, to your point, you know, I told you my dad's been doing this 41 years, and so when I first got started, he kind of told me this and stuck with me. He goes, Skyler, you know, parents, we've been parents to our children our whole lives, and I think doing this is one last opportunity for us to be kids to them one last time. So it's truly a gift that you're giving your kids on that day. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, how about this? We'll close with the Lord's Prayer, and I'll turn the recorder off, and then I think Mark and Vanessa and Skyler can linger for a few minutes if anyone wants to chat with them or talk a little bit more, but otherwise then we'll be done for the night, okay? So let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thanks for coming, everyone.